Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Midwest Beats here on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM. And that is a song called High Noon, an instrumental that opens up the live show of my special guest. My guest tonight is kind of an icon of Chicagoland music. His name is Stan Scora. He's a co-founding member of the classic, iconic Chicago power pop band, The Kind. If you're of a certain age, you might remember The Kind playing in the clubs. Clubs like Point East, Midway Ballroom, Thirsty Whale, and so many others. They were right there spearheading the power pop scene along with Off-Broadway, Shoes, Pez Band, Cheap Trick, and others. You can't mention power pop without mentioning The Kind. And you can't mention The Kind without mentioning Stan Scora, one of the co-founders. Well, we've got Stan with us. Believe it or not, all these decades later, he is still out there making music. And he's got a new album coming from the indie Australian label Black Parrot Music. And Stan is our guest. We'll be talking about where you can see him this weekend. I'll give you a hint. It's in downtown Hobart at the record store. So here we go. Let's bring Stan on and talk to him a little bit. And then we're going to get to some of the music from throughout his career. Stan, are you with me?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing. It seems like, we just spoke a few minutes ago, actually, but it's actually been a few hours. What are you doing today?
Yeah. I am doing the music, getting discs ready and running around with ads and stuff. And it's been really exciting stepping back into the Chicago area and trying to get the songs out stuff, you know?
Now, you've been here how many weeks? A couple of weeks at least, and you said you were doing record store, conventions, things like that.
Yeah. We're doing this time around is we're doing all of the record shows that we could find. We couldn't get into the countryside one this weekend, but we did Joliet, there's a whole slew of them coming up. And it's surprising because people are expecting all these vendors out there selling old records, and we're kind of sitting there with some guitars and playing songs, and it's fun. I've got a friend of mine, Bart Pappas, who's from the Bleach Party band, and he sits in and lends a hand when they come into town. Oh, that's the biggest thing that we've done, Tom, is to try and promote this through record shows, and you know. It's hard these days because if you're not really a big social media person or you're not high on the list, then, you know, you don't have many outlets to do this, you know?
Right. Hey, so, I can relate to that. I'm not a big techie kind of person either. The internet is still foreign land to me.
Yeah, you know, it's so vast, and there's so many people out there trying to pulling at you, trying to get you to do this and that. And all you really want to do is make some music and play for people. And so it's kind of a distraction.
Right.
You know, I think going to the record, we're going to do some in stores. You know, I think we have this one. We have this one in Hobart coming up,
right?
Which is going to be a lot of fun. We get to play the new set, which is I got to iron out a lot of the bugs in Australia playing through Perth, through the Western Australia, and there was quite a bit of challenges getting back on stage, learning my stagecraft all over again, because I've been producing for such a long time now that it's like starting anew and very rejuvenating, you know, in that regard.
How long ago did you move to Australia, and what brought you to Australia, of all places? Why down under?
Oh, that's not too hard to imagine, but I went to do some courses that at UCLA in California. I met somebody. And she brought me to Australia.
Okay.
Is how that works out.
Yeah, that usually is how it goes.
That's right. Yeah, we were here in Chicago for a while. She loves Chicago. And where else? We lived in L.A. and New York a bit. But you end up back where you're supposed to be. So,
right.
Nice place. Can't complain. You know, it's... not Chicago, though. I'll tell you that.
So you're not coming back full time. You're just visiting for a while.
Well, I'm in town all the time. I'm in town maybe months a year, you know, doing things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been production. You know, I've been in studios and So this is where the biggest changes come, is getting out and playing again. And what I'm finding is, you know, the only real places to go to are like open mics and like, well, now the record shows, and it's like, it's okay. You know, mm-hmm. people would say like, oh, I can't do that. Oh, no. We play, you know, the Aragon. We're not going to do it. It's like, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It really doesn't, you know, so.
As long as you got an audience for your music.
Yeah. That's the best part about it, you know. And you got to put all that other stuff away. So,
you know, what is your take? What is your take on, you know, you played the air gun, you played pointies, you played haymakers, you went on tour, you guys had albums out, you were all over the radio. You come back all these years later, these decades later. What's your take on what has stayed the same and what has drastically gotten different? And what's your thoughts about today's music scene? I mean, obviously you're jumping back in with both feet, but it's not like it was in the 80s when we were young guys starting our careers.
Exactly. Well, that's true. Yeah. And I think when we were starting, it still wasn't like it was back in the 50s. You know?
That's true.
But, you know, and it's what I'm finding, Tom, is it's about the same, but it's different. You know, it's we're older. We've gotten older. And instead of, you know, well, CDs. Some people don't know what CDs are, you know, let alone vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
So it's totally different, but it's still the same. You just got to go out there and do what you do. And, the really interesting thing is that my cassettes are big in Australia. CDs are still big in Australia and vinyl. So it's kind of like, I remember one of the guys in the Kaim used to say that the further away you go from Chicago, every 10 miles, it goes back like 10 years. So you go out to Elgin, and it's like, as Elgin's like, you know, 10 years in the past or whatever it was. And
right.
So I think you get out to Perth, and it's really far back.
Wow.
But it doesn't matter. It's just genuine music lovers. And
What you're doing now is you've got new music, you've got older music, but it's really not been heard, so it's new to most ears. You've got brand new stuff you're working on, but as you've probably noticed worldwide, and especially here in Chicagoland, the Midwest, the world is run by tribute bands. I mean, how hard is it to get original music out there for you coming back? You mentioned about how a lot of bands are, you know, too good to play an open mic or to go out there. You're not afraid of doing that. But a lot of bands are. Their original music is sitting in a can or in their basement with a phone, you know, broadcasting it to 12 people. Right now, it's a hard world for original music artists. Is it only here where I reside and see it? But you've traveled around the world. Is it the same everywhere?
Yeah, well, it's true. You have to find your audience, you know. And we had little tricks that we did with, you know, with the Kind back then, and I tried to tell the people how to, you know, the younger guys how to do it. And they can't grasp it, you know. But it's true. There's a lot of cover bands, a lot of tribute bands, like you said,
mm-hmm.
let alone cover bands. And I'm noticing that now that I'm gigging around there, I'm starting to see that there are original acts, but they're kind of like they're in the shadows because they don't have a footing. You have to have that following, you know. You have to. And to do it, you have to go out and play it.
Right.
It's kind of like a catch-22, you know? So that part, I guess, it hasn't changed too much, you know?
But back,
the thing that I kind of miss is, you know, the sock hops, that kind of stuff. You know, the high school, I don't think you're doing that kind of socializing where you'd hang around and because people are on their phones so much.
Yeah.
Or they're, you know, it's the... It's just a little different that way.
And they're not listening to albums anymore. Well, it's starting to go back to that. But, I mean, everything was a song here, a song there, off the internet, heavily compressed. It didn't have the same life that it had. I mean, if you remember back when we first started doing shows at places like Midway Ballroom, Point East, Haymakers, Thirsty Whale, all those great clubs, it was about original music. We saw bands like Shoes, Pez Band, Kind, Cheap Trick. I mean, all of those bands, Poison Squirrel, Bohemia. 1099 or whatever they were called. There was all these great bands, Gambler, and they had albums out full of originals. Sure, you guys would do a cover song here and there, but for the most part, people shelled out big bucks to come hear local bands play their originals, hoping to discover the next best thing. And I just don't see that anymore. And you could write the best songs in the world today, and you're going to be hard-pressed to get it heard. And I just find that frustrating from my point, and I'm just a radio guy and a fan, but you're the guy creating it. And it's got to, I don't know how you guys keep doing it, where you keep making all these great songs, you go in, you record them, you put your heart and soul in them, and then people say, oh, can you play Brown Eyed Girl? Can you play Skynyrd? Mm-hmm. You know, that's got to be frustrating. Right. I don't know how you do it, man.
I think a lot of it kind of evolved away from it's publishing, first off. You know, like back when we were doing stuff, when we were getting going, the Beatles were a great songwriting team, and there was publishing. And so it was like, you know, it kind of like spurred it on. We're like, oh, yeah, we're going to write songs. We're going to be an original band. And then the publishing kind of got eaten up by corporations. You know, I think the music business has kind of gone too corporate.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's obvious, you know. there used to be much more songwriting, but there was more opportunity too, you know. And I remember going to, there was a place called Neo's up on the north side.
Oh, I remember Neo's. Yeah, a good club.
Remember Neo's?
Yep, I was.
Yeah, I'd go in there. We go after a gig like at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m, and it was like I think a 4 o'clock bar. And you'd walk in there, you know, with your, we had like our new wave outfits, our punk hairdos or whatever.
Parachute
pants. Some guys
would
come in with tux. Yeah, that's right. Then you get the guys with the two tuxedos. They came in from a high school gig, and then there'd be some guys, you know, from an orchestra. And it wasn't divided the way it has become, you know, like with all these different genres. It was just music,
right.
You know, and everybody kind of hung out, and it wasn't, so. Well, you know what I mean. It's been really a big business now, so it's a shame, but...
It's not as much fun. It's not as much fun. I mean, I remember there was a bar on every corner.
Right.
It was an era when all our choices were 3 network TVs, go to the movies, or go to a club. That was pretty much it.
Right.
No video games, no
VCRs.
Phones, no VCRs. Yeah. The national anthem would come on at midnight, and at midnight we were just getting ready to go. So you'd hit the corner bar, and every bar had a band. It was the pre-DJ days before all the mixing started. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was crazy busy for all of us keeping things going. And, you know, the 1980s with the power pop scene that forged in Chicago, a lot of people don't give Chicago the credit. They think, oh, Chicago, house music. Maybe Chicago blues.
Right.
But we were a huge entity in the 80s with all these bands getting signed. And then it went away for a little bit. And then we had the 90s come in with the Pumpkins and Veruca Salt and all these other amazing bands. So Chicago has been that hotbed of music for decades. 60s, we had the Buckinghams, the Ides of March, the Crying Shames, all of those guys, New Colony Six.
Oh, man, yeah.
And then you guys came along. Chicago. And the 80s were great.
It's fun again. You know, I see a lot more bands than I used to. You know, it's like you say, oh, there's not a place for music. But I was in Perth for many years, and we didn't see any music. And then I started looking, and it's like everybody's got music.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's the cover songs.
Right.
So they're coming in and they're playing, you know, this and that. So that's still fertile ground. You keep going. I think you could cut your own car door there. So, you know, you can do the same thing here. You just got to do it.
Right.
And that's what we're doing here. It's why we're playing these songs and putting the show together. And we're just going to do it. See where the cards fall, you know.
Well, you've had quite a history of songwriting, quite a history of different sonic sounds, different styles. You're kind of getting into country. We'll get to that a little later. But let's go back right now to a song called You're My Girl.
Yeah.
And this is something you've recently reissued, correct?
Yeah, You're My Girl was a song that Mimi Vitinas wrote.
From Pez Band,
And that's right, yeah. And he gave it to me a long time ago, and I kind of like made it my own. And he's trying to get it back. I guess we'll have to give it back to him at some point. But right? Yeah, so this was a great production. We did this in You're My Girl. We recorded at River North, which was Jim Peterick's studio for a while. I think it was Jim and some partners.
And yeah, Larry Millis was part of that too, remember? Who's from the Ides as well.
That's right, Larry. Yeah, Larry was down there. And Milos, what's it? No. I forgot the interview. That was, he's gone out to big fame. Name eludes me at the moment. So we did this track there, and the engineer turned around and talked to the producer. He says, so what kind of music is this? Because he didn't know what the style was. It was kind of new at the time. But it's already leading towards the country thing, right, of the Americana thing, theme. I think what we were trying to do, Tom, was cross like Clint Eastwood and the Eurythmics.
I love that. Let's see the results of that. All right, well, let's play this song. So the listeners have probably never heard this. Again, this was an early 80s song that you've recently unearthed, and we're playing it again tonight. So let's do it. We'll be back with Stan Skora in just a minute. But right now, let's take you back to Stan when he was just a youngin. 1980s, You're My Girl. Understand what it takes to change from boy to man. Now the day has come, it's time for real. I wanna tell you how I feel. I think you're special with your hair and curls, and I wish you were my girl. I'd do anything in the whole world. Now I'm older, I understand. I think you realize I'm changing. You're changing, we're changing, yeah. Confess, it's the man in me. You confess, you're my girl.
You're my girl. You're my girl.
You're My Girl. That is my guest tonight, Stan Scora. 45 years ago? 1980 you recorded that.
God, yeah. You're right, Ryan Rather. Yeah, that's been a little while, isn't it?
Yeah, it has. But you know what? Man. That sounds, that's a fun song. That's the kind that we would hear in the clubs all around Chicagoland. And you're right. I didn't pick it out right away, but there is a Western swing kind of groove with that. It reminds me a little bit of what Wall of Voodoo did later. Kind of like you opened the door for that sound back then. You know, Wall of Voodoo came out, Blasters came out, all of those kind of Western cow punk, I guess it was called at that point. But yeah, you were a pioneer there. Yeah. I like that. Who was the girl singing?
Wow. Oh, that's Holly Stevens. And she's from Chicago. She used to sing in the UIC Jazz. Just a monster voice. And I think she was with a damn butterfly. And so she's still around town singing. What a talent.
That is a great song.
And we did it.
I mean, it's contagious. We're both, Dee and I are both in here kind of boogieing in our seats to that song. And I think I'm going to have to add that to my playlist when I do music shows, because I think that's a song that people need to hear more of.
Yeah, that's the Bushwhackers. That was what we called the Bushwhacker.
I say you don't give it back. Don't give it back to Mimi. Keep it. It's a good one. It's a keeper.
Good. Yes, right. We'll keep dodging that bullet.
That's right. Will you be doing that song perhaps on Saturday when you play at the Record Bin? I think you're going to get there about 1 o'clock, do about an hour or so of music, talk a little bit, and hang out with us for a while. Taking us back to the old days. I'm hoping a lot of the old timers come out. You know, I'd like to see folks like Pat Carroll and some of the M&R Rush guys and people that were around back in the day. Yep. You know. That remember all these good times. It's fun to talk to people who was there.
Yep. We're going to do that one. It's going to be it's been revamped. You know, like I say, we're bringing all these songs back, but there's nothing wrong with the song. Times change, and you just got to update them a little bit. So it'll be fun. Let's see if you recognize it. That'll be interesting.
Okay, tell me a little bit about Bart Pappas. He's going to be performing with you. I am not familiar with Bleach Party. That's a band that you threw a curve on me with. Are they Chicago?
Oh, they are Chicago, and I think the bass player's in Dallas. He comes back here. Now, they've got about 5 or 6 CDs out, and it's what a great little group. Two gals, two guys, a lady drummer, lady singer, and the guitar and bass are the guys. And they're pop. They're like a real pop band, but more like Left Bank or the Zombies.
Oh.
Like pop, not power pop, but like, you know, like the real radio pop from the late
60s. Old days, yeah.
And but you know, real guitar stuff. So I'd say they could do power pop if they needed to, but it's kind of cool to see a good girl drummer playing. And she slams it good. And
That's like Gina from the Go-Go's.
That's right. Now, Bart's dad was in a group in the 60s. He was in the Medallions, and they made some records around
Oak Park. Medallions or the Swingin' Medallions?
Now, see, there you go. Not the Swingin' Medallions.
Okay.
He was in the Medallions. That's Chicago. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of tricky there, but... So he's got some longevity with music, and he's just one of those quiet guys that just nails it, you know. So, like I say, when I come into town, Bart usually lends a hand, you know, and if his schedule's open. And I think the Bleach Party's going to be doing some gigs this month and next month. I have to ask him on Saturday what's going on.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting him and getting to know his band a little bit. Is he playing with you on the new material?
He, as we have, no. We haven't recorded him yet, but he has played with us. He filled in for Chris Mass on bass when we did a Kind reunion a couple years ago. We did an outdoor event down in Justice, Illinois. Okay. And we had the band reformed a bit. And Bart sat in and did bass. We had Carlo on drums and myself. And and one of the guys from Bohemia jumped on guitar.
That's a blast that from was, the past.
Bohemia. Yeah. Yeah, there's they really came together. We produced a record a while back called the Chicago Club Volume 1.
Yeah, you're going to bring that. You're going to bring that Saturday, aren't you?
I am. It's got a companion book that was printed. I think about a 20-page book with a history of all these bands and what they had to say, and the Didistics, Poison Squirrel.
I love
great
Poison
names
Squirrel.
That,
they were a great band. Yeah. Poison Squirrel, Naked Ray Gun. I mean, what bands we had back then.
It was amazing. We really got a good chunk of time. We grew up in a nice time there.
Now, when you bring that CD and that book out, how many copies do you have? Because I definitely want to buy one myself.
Well, we're going to have, I believe we got 10 copies.
Okay.
I have more books. I have about 20 books. We could, you know what? If you're gonna supply them, I could ship some more to you. So we could
okay.
do that.
Definitely want to look into that, because to me that's like my rock and roll yearbook going back to my high school, a little after high school perhaps, but to have the bands you mentioned and then having a companion book with photos and notes and things like that, that'll take me way back in time, and it'll be like the old days, sitting in the bedroom with the cans on, reading all the liner notes and all that fun stuff. So, wow.
Oh, man, yeah. So, liner notes. Oh, remember the big LPs? Pull out the sleeve and get the... Yeah, that was the tactile joy of it all,
Yeah, I used to write liner notes for Backtrack Records, a division of Sony Special Products. I did about 15 albums for them back in the 80s and early 90s. Johnny Winter, Dixie Cups, Fabian. Remember, they were based out of Georgia, and I was there. Jeff Lind, who you probably remember from The Entertainer, late, great Jeff Lind, a wonderful blues writer. He was one of them, and he got me involved, and we were doing liner notes for that label for a long time. I miss liner notes. We need to get those back, too.
Yeah, that's right. We do. I think we need to get more original music and good liner notes to go with it.
Now, you
and
mentioned
good photos.
Yeah, good photos. Got to have good photos. Not those little low-res things you see on the internet. So many bands don't even understand the concept of a really good quality photo. They think, "Oh, I got my phone. Yeah. Why should I hire somebody?" But you've got a new project. You have told me that the working title is Back on Track. So, what exactly are we hearing any of the songs tonight from that? Is the Hard Time, is that on there?
Yeah, Hard Time is the lead-off track off of that, and after the project, I should say. I don't know where it's going to sit on the album, but it's been released about 4 months ago, and it's doing good. I'm not pushing it. I'm not doing anything much to it because I was waiting for the rest of the record to get finished.
Right.
And but it's up there. It's getting played, and we've been talking to some music supervisors for films, so we're going to see if we get it positioned. The Kind had a song in a film a couple of years ago. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
We had we were in a feature release it was called The Dirt from Motley Crue.
Oh, I remember that movie. You guys had a song in that?
Yeah, we had a cue. We had a big cue about 10 minutes into the movie. They were playing Total Insanity on the radio, and it went over a couple of different scenes. So, that was a big surprise. But, we're talking with supervisors and there's all these outlets, Tom, from open mics to, in stores to you name it, you just got to keep at it,
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing.
So are you getting a lot of attention from actual broadcast radio anymore, be it college, NPR, commercial radio? And if so, I mean, everything seems so regulated, so segregated musically. Where do you put a song like Hard Time? Hard Time is, again, Americana country. We're going to play it in just a minute. And that's your most current release. But where are you getting the attention from this song?
What I'm talking about is we're getting a lot of streams off the track.
Okay.
And it's all digital streams. It's not like what we used to do. It's a shame. But you got to fall back on that, on the Spotify's and the Apple Music and the Amazon Music. And the best thing I think that's going right now is YouTube, because you could track those things. They're not taking anything away from you, really.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and you throw a nice video behind it, or you go to one of these sites that, you know, generates it. And so I push YouTube. You know, we got a YouTube channel, and we'll show all that stuff on Saturday, you know, different things like that. But,
okay.
Yeah, traditional radio, there's lists and lists. I didn't even start at that, Tom. It's a big deal.
Wow. Well, this song, you described it as modern country, but it's got a lot of dance beats and stuff to it as well. So is this the future of country to you?
This and I think this and Shaboozey. If you ever heard anything from Shaboozey, that's another
okay.
one.
Well, let's play it. This is the new song, the new single from my guest, Stan. And is this under your name, or is it under The Kind, or is it under War Dogs? What's it under?
Okay, no, I'm just going to do everything with my name. I've been so shy all these years in changing band names. I'm just going to do my name.
Okay.
So there it is, folks.
All right, and here it is. This is the new single, Hard Time.
I had a girl once. She was all mine. We were real friends. Then we were just friends. I had a good time. It was alright. It was real fun. Then it wasn't too fun. I turned around, I looked in her eyes. I used to see her, now I only see what looks like a hard time. A hard time. I had a love, you say that she's fine. It's a strange game, call it lots of bad names. Some they like to take it, some they like to give. Only problems when you can't believe in it. So turn around now, it's okay. Understand it before you live it. It looks like a hard time. It used to be a good time. Turn around, look in her eyes. Turn the clock back, let it all fly. Let the good time settle and die. But don't go.
Turn around, open your eyes, better yet, open your ears to new music from Stan Skora. Hard Time is that song, and as I mentioned, it's definitely a modern country song, but it's got that shuffle beat. I can see people dancing out there in the sawdust and having a good time, and that song is as contemporary as anything that's on the radio today, Stan. You need to somehow get that to commercial radio. You need to get that in the right hands and in the right ears. How long ago was that actually recorded?
That was recorded probably, different parts in different places. But Most of it was done this year. The voices were done a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And because that's because we keep tricking the arrangements around, you know, twisting it and working on the arrangement. And but yeah, it's relatively new. You know, wow. It's going to sound very close to this on Saturday, except it's stripped down to just a couple of guitars and I'm going to use some backing tracks.
Okay.
You know, for some of the counterpoint on it. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of that, Tom. Been using backing tracks a lot.
Nothing wrong with that. Half the bands out there, half the artists out there sing just to tracks, so that's okay.
Good. Yeah, it'll sound great. I think it'll sound just great.
Well, that's country. Now, how's the rest of the album as far as styles? You're kind of a chameleon with your different sounds, and we've heard that already in what we've played. We're going to hear some more that'll take you in a different direction. That's some of the older stuff. But what is the new songs? What are they sounding like? And when do you anticipate recording the rest of them and getting this album out there?
Well, we've got a lot of the demos are roughed out, and we just need to do some more vocal tracks. And it's going to sound real close to a cross between You're My Girl and this. In other words, it's got that beat. It's got a dance beat to it.
Mm-hmm.
No, not screaming anymore. Those days are kind of gone. And but hopefully, there's a gentleman, Jeff Benges, who is tied in with a lot of big names, and he's going to be doing some lap steel, you know, pedal steel stuff. And so when he puts that sweetening on there, I think it's going to take the regular pop dance stuff and kind of give it that country flavor that we're looking for.
Right.
And we throw in, of course, we got to throw in some cello. And,
of course.
Then we got that's the whole formula right there, you know, a little cello, a little slide guitar, and hopefully it all mixes together.
You mentioned in one of the emails to me that you had spent a couple of years kind of embracing lap steel guitar, and you were talking about maybe even wanting to dabble with some Hank Williams Sr. stuff. Tell me what drew you to that sound, and are you playing steel on these, or you mentioned having someone come in and play?
Well, yeah, Ben's just going to come in, and he's going to do some of that. I'm probably going to end up with some of those chores. Down in Perth is a guy named Lucky Oceans. He lives down there over in Fremantle. And Lucky Oceans is the lap steel guy from Asleep at the Wheel.
Ooh,
you know,
okay.
Two, three Grammys under his belt. Yeah, he lives down there. They did a world tour back in the 80s, I guess, and he fell in love and just stayed there. And so anyway, Lucky and I crossed paths, and like, man, this would be a great instrument to learn. And my friends, they keep switching instruments around, you know, clarinets and cellos and things. So I thought, well, you know, I'm going to try it. So it took me quite a while, Tom. It's a different kind of a guitar tuning. And but once you get that under your belt, it just falls right in place. It's all Texas swing. So that's been a real joy in bringing me back to playing and performing, and don't think I'm going to play any of that on Saturday, but we'll have it on the record, though.
Okay.
And, yeah.
So is Lucky teaching you how to play?
I wish. No, he's a little too busy.
Okay. I was going to say, that's pretty cool. You got a master class.
Yeah, yeah. And we work up a bunch of Hank Williams Sr. tracks, and man, what a talent that guy was. Just incredible talent. Made a big impression on me, you know, and the world, for that matter. We're gonna do a tribute record, I think.
Okay, I was gonna say it's not gonna be on the new album Back on Track. It's gonna be a separate project.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we'll probably put that together separately, and okay. It's gonna be simple, but at the same time, you know, it's got to have that heart in there. So
right.
Let's see.
You told me something else that I want to address, because I was very impressed by the outlook, the attitude that you had. And you said you're talking about how you're on YouTube and you're doing all the usual suspects as far as selling digital. You had mentioned to me, I'm slowly moving to physical only product. You're kind of rebelling against the status quo right now and going old school again. What made you start thinking of that? And you do realize that is a long, drawn-out, and often expensive project.
Yeah, you picked up on that. Yeah, it's true. I'm actually going to. There's got a lot of product out on the internet, right? And I think what I'm going to do is to start to remove it.
Okay.
And start to back away from the streams, because in the long run, you know, it's such a small amount of money that you're earning. And I remember when Spotify came out, the Rolling Stones, they boycotted. You can't get the Stones on Spotify, I don't believe.
Well, you couldn't for the Beatles either for a while. The Beatles boycotted it for a long time.
Yeah, I guess they cut their own contracts, you know, with them. But it made me think about it, you know. And, I produced a track for Carla Hassett and Faith No More. Ooh, I forgot this singer. From Faith No More. Anyway, they did a cover of Julia. And that song is constantly getting played, 60,000, 70,000 streams. And it's we're getting a return like a $10. It's a real shame.
Wow.
It's a real shame.
So all that work and effort and talent, and you barely can go buy a Big Mac with it.
Yeah, yeah. Carla was with Billy Idol, and she sang on all of Mimi's stuff. You know, great voice. And, I think that's what we're going to do is kind of go physical media, mm-hmm. work with the record stores, work with the real distribution where the people are. And, we'll see how the cards fall, you know? I mean,
right.
It's all an experiment, I guess. We'll see.
Do you have a target date?
But,
you've got demos cut, you said. Do you have a target date for Back on Track as far as when we can maybe expect to see it? And will that be a physical product?
Good question. Good, yes. Yes, we're going to do this. That should be finished probably by February. And then if we get it manufactured and shipped out. So we're looking at end of winter, beginning of spring for actual physical product.
Okay.
And I believe it's going to be, well, for sure it's going to be CDs, but I think we're going to do some vinyl. Maybe it'll be a mail order, special order. I don't know how we're going to do this yet, but, we got to get this master's done. So,
Well, a lot of artists.
Got some other things to think about.
A lot of artists like Ricky Bird in New York, Joan Jetzel, guitar player, he's releasing stuff himself and signing copies and going through almost like a fan club situation. And, of course, some of your stuff could probably land on Miami Steve's Sirius Network, Underground Garage. I mean, there's so many outlets on – it's actually still real radio because I listen to it in my car. It's just digital. But there's some great hosts out there, a lot of musicians that appreciate other musicians and the kind of endeavor you're doing. And I would strongly suggest to have whoever is working with you as far as management or – handlers or just friends that are in the business to start tracking down some of these shows. There's a zillion channels out there, and they all have big followings.
Oh, yeah. I'll be tapping you for those contacts. I think we got to do all of that and more probably. But
right.
I'm enjoying it. It's going to be so much fun this Saturday. And,
Let's go back in time once again. We were talking about Neo, one of the great clubs out there. I remember O'Banion's, and I remember Tuts is a place I spent a lot of time at Tuts back in the day when I was just a youngin', wearing really bad merry-go-round clothes and having a strange jewelry and all the stuff that we wore. Parachute pants were my thing back then.
God, yeah.
Only a few pictures to prove that, but let's go back to Tuts right now. There's a song that you sent me that kind of blew my mind. It's a live recording, and when I heard it, it made me think of Velvet Underground, the delivery style of it. When I heard that, it reminded me of, you know, some of their stuff. And I don't know who was all involved in this. Was this a Kind song? Was this one of your other bands? I'm talking about No Class. It's got a sludgy groove to it. It's dark. It's raw.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of Tuts and Stages and O'Banion's and all those wonderful punk, gothy kind of clubs we had. Excalibur, remember that? Man, so many
Excalibur,
great clubs.
Yes.
And this song reminded me of what I would have heard there. So before we play it, tell me about No Class.
Well, that was on that was released on my first EP, and then it was that actually that charted. That song got it's the hot. I don't know what they call it, the top three for about a month in the Southwest, Tempe, Tucson, out in Arizona and Southern California, and it was charting with David Bowie and the Plimsolls.
Wow.
And and we went back to the producers like, well, what do we do now? And they said, I don't know. this is all DIY country, you know, when you get going. And,
right.
But regardless, that was first released on a record. And then we did a live performance, touched with a lot of the material. And that track came out really good. That was Passett on bass and Thomas on drums. And the amazing Sam Hubbell on guitar.
Wow!
And I got to do the singing and play along.
So this is post Kind, correct? This is when you were solo.
Yes, that's right.
All right. Well,
after the Kind.
Let's play this now. We're taking you back to 1983, according to my notes here, and recorded live at Tuts. This is Stan. Check it out.
He speaks up, he just might tell you shut. He's a man with no class. A scene. He might stink, he knows it, he's not afraid to show it. Here we go. Let the girls. One was 90, one 15. Said he didn't care. And I'm an angry scream. Oh! He's a man with no. So. Look, yeah, he's killing. Someday he'll make a million. What can I say?
Applause, applause, live at Tuts. The great Jeff Thomas is the human metronome there. Good stuff. Song called No Class. And, of course, that is my special guest, Stan Skora, from his debut EP after leaving The Kind and sounding good. And, again, I get this groove, this underground Lou Reed kind of feel with that. And that's the kind of music that I remember hearing at some of those great Chicago haunts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Tuts and Ruts and Waves. And
yeah, Waves, yeah.
Well, there's another one, yeah. CODs, Hueys. God, it goes on and on and on and on.
Where are those clubs today? We have nothing like that anymore. It's a shame.
No, no, I know. And you know, because you're working, so you don't get to see the other bands. You know they're there. I mean, you guys meet up and have a drink, but you never really get to see the band.
Right.
That's what was so cool about that Chicago club, because I know they all had tapes. You know, and they went around and grabbed the little bowl. We got the thing to got everybody to participate. That's a good. You're gonna like that CD. That's pretty good.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, when you mentioned BB Spin is on there and Clocks and some of those bands. I mean, I remember my friend Shelley Harris taking me to some of the underground clubs and stuff, and she introduced me to Mo and BB Spin, and I was just addicted to their music, and I almost forgot about him till I saw your email saying, yeah, there's a BB Spin cut on there. I'm like, oh, my God. Someone's actually got tapes from those guys.
I got to tell you, Tom, you're going to be the first to have it on broadcast, but we've been working on a BB Spin record for 3 years, and we just finished it.
Really? How many key members?
I'll tell you.
How many key members are still there?
Well, it's Johnny Mo. Johnny Mo.
All right. He is BB Spin.
Johnny Mo. He's a master. Oh my God! Yeah, we just finished it last week when I came to town.
Wow!
It's quite something. Yeah, copy or something.
Oh, I'd love to have that. Is it going to be? Are these records we're talking about yours, his, and all the others? Are they going to be on this Black Parrot Music? And that's an indie label, I believe, in Australia. Are you affiliated with that? As far as besides being an artist, is that a vanity label of your own? Are you a partner in that?
Yeah, I'm tied into that. It's like a distribution, and the biggest thing I think that when I was in the Kanye, Frank and I, Frank Jelovic, we couldn't get distribution. You know, we had this deal and we had about four labels looking at us, but we couldn't get it inked, and that was the big failing, was not getting the distribution. Where, you know, fill in the blanks and these other bands, they got Epic and they. So, I just decided to go ahead and get my own distribution, mm-hmm. and there's got a lot less hassle. And it's like a co-op organization where that's actually how the Wisconsin Club came about.
Okay, that's a similar version, but it's the Wisconsin bands, right?
Yeah, it's across the border, and it's more, maybe more current, not from back in the day.
Okay,
but. It was the producer was used to play drums with me in the band, and he wanted to put all this music out that he, there's some great talent. That's what I'm saying. There's some great talent out there. There's a real good original music being played. You just got to find it. And so that's what this project was about.
Okay. I was kind of hoping when I saw the Wisconsin compilation that you'd have some of the classic oldies too, like Bad Boy or Bittersweet Alley or some of those bands that crossed into the Illinois scene for a while. They were a little
the
bit
Squares.
After you. The Squares, yeah.
Remember them, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of good bands coming down there, you know. But maybe we'll do that still. That'll be volume two.
Okay. Now, those are physically out because you've got the books to accompany them, and you'll have at least 10 copies, you said, of the Chicago one?
Chicago, we'll probably bring some more. Yeah,
okay.
We've got some more to bring.
Definitely want to have them in store, too, even after you pack up and go back to where you're going. I definitely want to have some for my customers.
We'll stock you.
Yeah, because I've got a lot of people from the old days that come in there and hang out. And we talk, we tell war stories, my friend, about the olden days. And some of the kids, their eyes light up and said, oh, my God, you know, really? Yeah. But the kind.
You're going to love this. You know.
The kind.
You know, King Cormac from Poison Squirrel is quite an accomplished artist. And he did a poster, the companion poster for that whole project, which you're going to. I'll bring those along, too. We're at the
poster.
Anyway.
Cool. The kind, what always blew my mind is that all these other bands got signed, like you said, Epic, Capitol Records, all these different groups were picking up these artists. Mm-hmm. And The Kind, one of the best of the bunch, and you were on 360 Records, which I think was an indie label, and you had a double-sided single mm-hmm. with Total Insanity and When We Rock, which both sides were getting tons of airplay, and even the earlier stuff you were getting airplay on. Why? Why did you guys get overlooked when all the other bands, and I don't want to say it, but some of them were much lesser bands as far as talent and songwriting. Why did they get picked up?
Well, you know, it's like the wheel turns, and all of a sudden it's going to be Cleveland.
Right.
Everybody goes to Cleveland. And then the wheel turns, and they go to Seattle.
Or Akron.
So, I think we just,
Akron had its time, too.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. Wow. It just kind of ran its course, I guess, and... But there were some good bands. You got the Pumpkins. They got signed.
Yeah.
And I guess just how it goes. I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Well, too bad.
That's true. That's true. I can still get people that ask for the 45. I still play it on some of my radio shows, and I'll get people coming in. I've got three crates of vintage records, everything from H.P. Lovecraft and the Bucks and people like that on up.
Yep.
The Hounds, John Hunter's solo stuff. I carry a lot of the local stuff. Always have, always will. And I get people to come in and say, do you remember a band called The Kind, and can we still get them? And you had brought me some stuff a couple of years ago, pre-COVID, right before COVID hit. You brought me a handful of albums.
Yeah.
And we sold out of those, and then we kind of fell apart. Yeah, they were gone. So if you have any more of those, that'd be great, too.
I'll bring those down. I got a box of T-shirts too. You could always pass those around if they're needed.
Yeah.
And
you had like a gift bag that the record came in, as I recall, and people loved it because they could buy the album and carry it home in a Kind bag. But
that's
right. Yeah, it's interesting.
Promotions.
Yep, it's all about that. We're running tight on time. Yeah. I did promise some listeners that we'd get to this thing that I had a couple people cite as being the holy grail for Thin Lizzy fans. You've got Pretty Vacant. You mentioned Baby Huey's Club. Back in the 70s, Phil Lynott of Thin Lizzy was backed by The Kind, and then you revealed that Midge was from Ultravox, was also on this. Tell me a little bit about it. We're going to play it. And this is included on that Chicago CD that you're going to have on Saturday for people to buy.
Yes. Yeah, this whole thing, I'm still learning about it because it came together in such a strange way. But apparently, Phil and I had done a concert at White Sox Park the night before. And I think Major was... He was actually playing guitar with. This is before Scott
Gorham.
That's right.
Yeah.
So he did a stint in there. And he's a hell of a guitar player. And he went to become lead vocal for
Ultravox.
My mind is gone.
Ultravox. Yes. Yeah. Wow.
So anyway, he was hanging around that night, and Frank Capak from Lovecraft, which. Lovecraft and The Kind had the same management company, which was the Ram Productions up in Cary, Illinois. And so Frank was pelling around with him because he knew him from Joe Jammer.
Right, I remember Joe. He worked with Jimmy Page as a roadie and stuff. But well, this is a great.
So that all came together. Yeah,
this is a great tune. We're going to play it because we literally are down to like a minute and a half, and I want to get this song in. I will see you Saturday, Stan. We're looking forward to it. Listeners, come out to the Record Bin on Main Street in downtown Hobart.
Yeah.
They'll be performing. He'll be there. Yeah. He'll have all this great music. You'll get a chance to get some signed things and to just go back in time with us. Frank, Stan, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you,
Bob. And we'll see you Saturday. This is Pretty Vacants. Phil Lynott, The Kind, and Midge as we say adios, amigos.
Okay.
Bye-bye.